Thank you. All right. My mom grew up in south of McCook on a little farm, so it's my pleasure to come back. And many years ago, I worked for Willie Altenburg on a ranch, the AI Cows in Ballantyne. That was an experience, too, so it's my pleasure to be here. However, it wasn't my pleasure to drive here yesterday. I live in a ski resort. I mean, I get a drive on snow 6 months out of the year. I didn't need to practice, but some of you did drive me across southern Wyoming yesterday. Anyway, I'm going to talk about direct marketing beef, pros and cons, do's and don'ts. That's a great title. I think I just told Jack on the phone that's how we were going to do it. I also want you to know that I didn't come out here to say that I know all there is to know about direct marketing beef. I'm talking about all the things that we learned by direct marketing beef, and we made most of the mistakes that there are. And I'm going to talk about those so you don't make as many if you choose to do this. It seems like everybody is doing it these days. You've got Oregon Country Beef, Lassiter Beef, and there's several others. These are just the three I found on the internet. And that's us, Yampa Valley Beef. We chose to do direct marketing of beef because we live in a very strange place compared to Scotts Bluff, Nebraska. Agriculture is about a $24 million business in Rouse County, Colorado. It used to be about 30% of the economy 30 years ago. It is less than 0.6% today, but it still produces about $24 million, depending on the phase of the cattle cycle. The really funny thing about Steamboat Springs is that it markets itself as a rural destination, and it has pastoral landscapes. If you ever see advertising, be it winter or summer, for Steamboat, you will notice that they always take pictures of ranches. That picture and that view of ranches is worth so much money to that ski area and that tourist-based economy that it's actually worth more than the production of cows. It's worth about $8 to $10 million a year. But we don't, in agriculture, make money from that resort. It's kind of a pain in the neck to have those people come and mess up everything and come ski. So what we tried to do, at the request of the Chamber of Commerce, was to try to find a way to keep ranching viable by being able to sell a product. We don't sell a product. They take advantage of our landscape. We don't get to sell anything in the tourist economy. So Yampa Valley Beef was an attempt to be able to direct sell beef into the local tourist economy in Rouse County. Okay, next slide. So why should you try direct marketing if you haven't already? Well, the number one reason, and the principal reason, is you do it to make money. You are in a commodity-based business, and only way to make money in a commodity-based business is to raise more of them, raise more pounds of it, try to capture more income per pound, or add another enterprise on a ranch that makes you money, like hunting. So Yampa Valley Beef, or direct marketing beef, does two of those. It tries to capture more money per pound, and it also adds an enterprise. You also can create a positive image for the beef industry. I think that the lady who spoke first this morning, a lot of the advertising that they did do is about creating a positive image. So if you direct market, part of the things you do is to create a positive image. And lastly, is to increase demand for beef. If the Argentinians can sell grass-fed beef into metropolitan markets in the United States, why can't a Sand Hills, Nebraska rancher do the same thing? We can do that here. We can do that by direct marketing beef, or we can try to do it. So increasing demand. Those are the three things of why you should. The drawbacks is, frankly, there's not a lot of money to be made in direct marketing beef, and it takes a long time to break even. Yampa Valley Beef took 18 months just to break even, and I can't tell you today whether we truly showed a profit. So if you're going to do this, realize it's a very long haul. Realize the profit margins are pretty slim, 3 or 4% at best. In our cases, there are some that are more successful. And it could take 3 to 5 years before you ever turn a true profit. So think about that long and hard. The other question is, if you start a direct marketing program, you might just be substituting labor on the ranch for labor for the direct marketing effort. I know of a great little company in western Colorado that has literally had the ranch suffer because they need ranch labor there, but they have to substitute it for the labor that's required to get the direct marketing effort off the ground. So you really want to think about that and make sure it does work. And lastly, there's some real liability issues when you're doing small direct marketing. You do have trace back. Even with Yampa Valley Beef with 22 members, I could tell you which box of beef came from which ranch. And while it might not be your fault something went wrong, you'd better think about that few extra $100 per carcass was worth the liability of risking the whole ranch. So in a nutshell, those are the things I think about, and I go in a little more detail in the presentation there. So if we're going to get on with it, what are we going to do? How are we going to do it to get started? The number one thing we got to do is we have to differentiate product. We got to create an identity. Beef is frankly generic. I mean, I know I'm not supposed to say that, but it is a generic product. And you have got to do something that sets your product apart from all the other beef that's out there. You got to make a claim about locality, you know, Yampa Valley beef. You know, we're not claiming anything other than it comes from the Yampa Valley of Colorado. Or you got to make a claim about quality. It's hung for 3 weeks. It is choice plus. Whatever it is, you've got to be able to do that. Or it's management. We raise all natural organic beef. Whatever your claim that you want to make, you've got to be able to differentiate that product from all the other beef that's out there in the marketplace. You got to sell the sizzle. You can't just sell the carcass. You have got to sell the sizzle from it. It's an old marketing term I picked up from somebody else. But selling the sizzle is the key. How do you differentiate the product? To give you an example, one of the things we did do well is sell the sizzle. We got more advertising when we started the Yampa Valley Beef for slaughtering or processing 10 head of steers than anybody in Colorado did for about a month. For 10 head, we were able to sell the sizzle and get great recognition not only for us, but for all of the beef industry. So you got to sell the sizzle. Labeling. The more claims you make on a label, the longer it will take to get approval from USDA. Locality claims can be approved locally, but if you start making claims about organic, natural, such and such raised, then that takes longer and longer, and it can take 6 months, 18 months to get labels approved. It's also important to remember consumers don't really read a lot of detail on labels. So if you spend a lot of money developing a label with lots and lots of little intricate messages, they won't read it anyway. You've got to keep a message very simple on a label. And our label says, better land, better beef, better foyer, I think is what it is. It doesn't say it's better than anything. It just says it's better. So is it better than chicken? Well, I hope so. Does it say it's better than anybody else's beef? No. But it's a real simple message. But the message we want to sell is, you know, buying our beef helps preserve agriculture in the Yampa Valley. That was the message we put on our label. And then lastly, you need to know your customer. And you need to think about who your customer is. You realize that women are by far the majority purchasers of food in households in the U.S. So if you're thinking about direct marketing, you better do some thinking about reading about who buys food products and what motivates them. And you can read about that. There's whole books on women that are marketing to women and things like that. So know your customer. It's actually not even a bad idea to have one of your customers be involved with your initial organization of your effort, because they'll help you. They want to make you successful too. They don't want to see you fail. Excuse me. Next one, please. It's essential, and I know this from a fact, it's essential that you have a business plan that you start with. It is not going to be static in the all-guiding Bible of how to direct market beef. But if you don't write it down, then you don't have any idea where you're going. When we started our program, you know, we just said, well, what the heck? We're not going to give you an extension value-added conference call. We're just going to go out there and see how far we get. Well, we got pretty far. We ended up taking about three-quarters of the hamburger market in Steamboat Springs, but we didn't have a plan to guide us. So what we had to do after 2.5 years of selling beef was stop selling beef and fix some of our problems and write a business plan and think it out before we could start back up again, which we did back in September. So, I can't emphasize this enough. It's in every management book there is, but take the time and the effort to commit it to paper. It makes a difference. You've got to include financial projections, marketing strategy, processing, and distribution. And you know what? If that business plan doesn't project you a profit, then you get a stop right then and there. You can't go forward without projecting a profit, and that's what a business plan is essential. Carcasses vary, and carcasses shrink. If you hang them longer, they shrink. If you take cow carcasses, you don't want to hang them very long. They can shrink 10% in moisture. That's a bad thing for hamburger. But you've got a plan on carcass yields. They also vary a great deal. Even within a single ranch can vary a great deal. And shrink too. So plan on those in your business plan. And this is really important. It's very easy to sell steak. No problem selling high-value cuts. You better plan on selling the whole carcass. One of the groups of ranchers that we work with in western Colorado had a great market for steaks. Steaks represent about 12%, 14% of the carcass. So they were processing cows to keep or finished cattle to keep up with the contracts they had for steaks, and at one time had 7,000 pounds of ground beef sitting in storage because they didn't have a market for it. So you've got to plan to market to sell the whole carcass. And particularly have a plan for the lesser value cuts. As a matter of fact, that's how Yampa Valley Beef prevented that mistake, is we focused on selling lower value stuff first, so we knew we could sell it, because we knew we could sell steaks easily. So we had a plan to sell principally hamburger. Okay. Next. This is just a slide of some of our data we tried to collect. One of the uniquenesses about Yampa Valley Beef is that we said a percentage, the mission of Yampa Valley Beef was to sell, was to preserve the working landscapes of the Yampa Valley for the future, something like that. And the way we were going to do that was we were going to say a certain percentage of the cows had to have grazed on land under conservation easement. That's land that's protected. That's land that will always graze cows. So we kept data on which cows. That's the CE question mark column. What we paid to the producer, the carcass weights, the boneless weights, and what the net per cow, what each cow made it. So we kept that kind of data. It's not real complicated, but with cows, we couldn't find that data of how much typical shrinkage they went from live weight to hanging weight and from hanging weight to boneless muscle mass. That data we couldn't find, so we had to generate that. And that was a real tough thing for us to pick a price of where we could sell our product at and make money when we didn't know, because we didn't do our plan, how to price our beef. So our break-even price, turns out, in this particular bunch of cows, is around $1.83 a pound. And that varied all the way from $1.60 a pound, if we got really good muscled cows and bulls, all the way over $2 if we got really thin cows. So we lost money on really thin cows, but we got really well-muscled cows, we could make a lot of money. So that's what it is. Next slide. And tonight I'd be happy to talk to you in more detail about any of these things. Business structure. This is also a critical decision for you to make, what business structure you're going to be in, because you do want to protect the liability of the ranch. We have cooperatives. Those are traditional, we've done, just regular old cooperatives. You don't see many of those anymore. We have marketing cooperatives. I believe U.S. Premium Beef is one of those. You have to buy into it, and you also must deliver that product to the cooperatives. That makes a real difference in assuring a supply of product. And then lastly, a group of sheep producers in Wyoming have put together a new business structure called third-generation co-ops. They're the same thing as a marketing co-op, except they allow for outside investors to invest in the co-op. And I'm not real familiar with it, but I can put you in touch with guys that put that together. But they were very successful in being able to sell lamb using this third-generation co-op idea. And I don't even know if it's been, that concept has been copied in Nebraska or Colorado, if it's law and legal to do there, but it is in Wyoming. The next two ways are limited liability companies. Limited liability companies are partnerships. Those are pretty good. That's the structure we started Yampa Valley Beef under, because we felt it limited us liability-wise and the rest of the ranching participants. So very common now. You see most service industries, small businesses are organized this way, and I think they're worth a good look. You can be traditional corporations. I don't know much about it. And then nonprofit. If your principal goal is really to create a positive image, maybe you should be a nonprofit. And Yampa Valley Beef has been discussed a lot, but maybe we should just be a nonprofit. We're not making that much money anyway, but the goodwill we generate is priceless for the beef industry, and maybe we should just be a nonprofit corporation. So it's worth a thought, but probably a minor consideration for most of you. Okay, next slide. Make the cost of ownership realistic. You know, if people are going to kick in just a few bucks to be a member and get to sell some beef and hopefully make a few more dollars, their commitment is nominal too. So when you structure these things, and it's going to take more than just your ranch to get it done, and you're going to do it with your neighbors or people that have like cattle or whatever it is that you decide to make your niche difference, make that cost of ownership significant so those people are interested in your business. Yampa Valley Beef, I didn't know. We said we're going to form a corporation. Well, we'll just charge you $100 to be a member. Okay? Well, $100 wasn't enough commitment to make those people vitally interested in our product all the time. So we should have made it at least $1,000 so they had a financial stake, or we should have made it $10,000. And if we had a written business plan that could project a profit 5 years out, that's not unrealistic. But at $100, nobody really cares whether you go under or whether you succeed. or how much money you make. So it's really critical that we put together, that you make that commitment to other members, if you're not doing this on your own, that financial commitment is strong enough that they're interested. Okay. You got to have a processor and processing. This will be an interesting relationship for you who never have done this before. It was to me. It's got to be USDA inspected, and it's got to be close. You can't just haul cattle and haul product all over. You got to have it somewhere that's in a reasonable driving distance to be able to make it work. It has to be USDA inspected if you're going to sell it with a label and sell it into a food store. You can get around that rule, and there is data and research that says that you can sell quarters and halves of beeves. If you're doing that, you sell them live, and it doesn't have to be a USDA inspector. It has potential, and there's some research I can point you to if you want to read more about it. It was done by Colorado State University. But basically, it's got to be USDA inspected. But even a USDA inspected in a smaller plant like one in Scotts Bluff or one in Craig, Colorado, the one that we use, they're pretty much used to being custom processors. They process steers individually for people. They do little runs. They do all the 4-H livestock. They're not necessarily commercial processors. They're not used to, they're used to being able to process 100 to 500 pounds of hamburger at a time. They are not used to being able to process 1,000 to 5,000 to 10,000 pounds of hamburger at the same time and making absolutely sure that that hamburger's consistency is an 80-20 lean to fat ratio. You can't mess that up. Your restaurants won't accept it. It can't be 70 one day and 90-10 the next. It's got to be consistent. So those packers have a little bit of learning curve too, and it helps them. It's their business. It makes generates more business. They get to hire more people. They get to make more money. But it's really critical that you have a good relationship with your packer and that they understand the difference between being a custom versus a commercial processor. Other issues that custom processors and commercial processors need to think about is how fast you freeze products. It makes a difference. You can't afford a nitrogen tube that instantly freezes it, but you also got to be smart enough not to stack 1,000 pounds of beef where you used to freeze 100 pounds, and now you stack 1,000 pounds. It won't freeze in a couple hours in one of those blast coolers. It takes 24 hours, and if you let it freeze, if it takes 24 hours to freeze, you just hurt your product quality of those boxes in the middle. We made that mistake. It cost us some business. And you don't get many chances with restaurants to make a mistake with food quality. You get about one, and then they're going to go on to somebody else. So you really got to understand those things. Do you have the space to freeze the product? Do you have the space to allow carcasses to hang for 3 weeks if that's one of your goals? You really need to do that. And lastly, paper wrap of products really doesn't cut it in today's marketplace. You've got to be able to cryovac it or have it in a very attractive package, and your packer's got to be able to do that for you to make it work on a retail shelf. If it's just going in a wholesale trade in a restaurant, that's not as critical, but it is critical for direct marketing to things. Next slide. I think the biggest lesson we learned, and I'm not criticizing the packer we used at Craig, because I think he's a very good one and he has a very good reputation, but he had a lot to learn. And we would have been a lot way ahead if we'd involved one of the meat scientists from Colorado State University earlier in the process to help us identify some of these problems we had with inconsistent quality of the lean-to-fat ratio, inability to freeze stuff. So I can't stress enough, if you're interested in doing this, you're going to have a relationship with a packer, go down and see whoever your local meat scientist guy is and get or gal and get them involved, because they can help you a lot with stuff that you don't normally know about. So I really can't overemphasize that enough. We did it too late in the game for Yampa Valley Beef. We made those mistakes too late, and we could have prevented them all if we'd have got them involved. Next slide. Inventory is not the responsibility for selling a frozen product. It's not the responsibility of the packer to manage for you. They will typically do it because they typically will have a freezer and you typically won't, and they'll help you get started. But they're not going to be the ones that are going to stack the old stuff to the front. They're just going to be the ones that stack it in there. So make sure you understand it's your responsibility to keep that going in there. You are responsible for the inventory. Next slide. Communications and relationships. This is the single biggest issue that will make a small direct marketing effort stumble. Herding cattle is easy compared to herding ranchers when it comes to direct marketing beef. It's not that they are If they're not, half of them are smart and half of them are dumb and half won't go one way. It's that they all got too many great ideas and we're going all ways. And when you're going all directions, you can't focus your energy to get something accomplished. And then the next thing that happens is you start blaming each other. Well, I don't like old Gary because he didn't do what he said he was going to do. And the Packer didn't do this. So it takes real skill. And this is the biggest stumbling block you will face in a group situation dealing with communications. You must keep those things focused on the issue and not on people. It is absolutely essential. And if you need help, you can even get a facilitator. I know that might sound crazy to you, but it does help, and you've got to be able to do that. This is what one of the things that Yampa Valley Bee continuously struggled with, and it caused relationships that have never been mended to this day. Next slide. Don't use livestock terminology to describe your beef product. If you're talking to the food editor of the Denver Post, you don't say, we take cull cows and turn them into hamburger. Because what they'll ask you is, what's a cull cow? And you don't want to tell a food editor what a cull cow is. Okay? I'm telling you this from experience. And just from experience, I want you to know the answer is cull is short for culinary. Okay? And it's really critical. We talk about market cattle. Be able to describe your product. You're talking about beef. Don't describe it in animal livestock terms. We're used to those terms, but don't do that. I know. If I hadn't got that right, I know that the cattle women in Rock County would have killed me if I'd have said that. So it's market cows and bulls. Next slide. Some additional considerations. You start these things with volunteer labor, and you get real used to that. You don't have to pay them. That doesn't work. You've got to plan in to pay people to do this. Even if you sit around, someone's going to do a little bit of work for you. It's just going to take an hour or two. Plan on at least eventually moving volunteer labor into paid labor. That's the way all businesses work. Yampa Valley Beef did this on a very small scale, but we over-relied on volunteer labor, and it killed us in the end. We burnt people out because they didn't get any reward for it. Accounts receivable. You're used to being paid for your livestock in a few days. No big deal. When you set up a direct marketing business, you will always have income tied up in accounts receivable. It'll be a percentage. It'll vary how efficient you are in your business, but you'll tie up 2%, 3%, 10%. Will always be tied up in accounts receivable and in inventory because it doesn't move as fast. So you've got to realize that it's not just like selling calves. You sell them the next day, you get a check. It gets tied up, and it'll always be tied up. You can't compete on price alone. You saw our break-even price of $1.84. I guarantee you the big guys in Noble Cisco can raise it for less than that. You couldn't build a truck to compete with Ford or Chevy in your garage. Don't think you can sell a carcass on price alone. You got to have that sizzle. You got to have that differentiation. The meat business is a very, very competitive business. When you're like me and you take away Noble Cisco's 2/3 of the hamburger business in Steamboat Springs, they're not just going to smile and pat you guys on the back about what a great job you did. They are going to get competitive. They're going to get competitive, and they might even be kind of sneaky about it because maybe the chef at the ski area, he said vacation to Cancun, and maybe they'll give him one. I mean, they do things like that. It's a competitive business. So be prepared to be in competition with the big boys. And lastly, value added is the buzz. This is the time to do these things if you're interested. USDA has grants and loans available. If you're interested at all, you can get money. We actually got about $10,000 in startup costs to start our project through the state of Colorado through USDA because people liked our thing. Our most successful little direct marketing effort on the Western Slope that I'm aware of is Homestead Beef, has received two grants for value added. They do have a little packing plant in Paonia. They also do pre-cooked stuff, but they've gotten two. And those two grants were the little hurdle that got them over the top because they were undercapitalized. And I didn't mention that either, but all of these are undercapitalized. So, next slide. You've got to be able to afford your mistakes. You are going to make them, like all the ones I've described here. And I think some other efforts that have been bigger, better funded, didn't know this rule very well. And we did. We started small. We were able to afford our mistakes, and you must be able to do that too because you're bound to have them. So start small and be able to afford your mistakes. Next slide. Lastly, this effort of direct marketing beef. There was a project going on with Colorado State University and American Farmland Trust. They're going to have two workshops in Colorado in February, in Colorado Springs and in Montrose. And that website that's up there, and it's also in the proceedings, will have much more detail, different presentations, direct experiences from other people, you can go to it and look those things up. So, I think that's it for me. I'm a little bit early. I think I have time for a couple of questions if there are any. Yes. The question was, you made several mistakes, and why did it still work? I think because we had a great idea. We'll direct market beef with this. It has this sizzle as a locality claim that says our beef is, quote, better, and that people's desire in Steamboat Springs, when it's a tourist town, to be able to take something and taste something that's from here, they're willing still to pay a premium for it, and we were able to overcome them. To give you an example of that, restaurants, our beef was about 60 cents a pound. Our hamburger was about 60 cents a pound more than what they could buy from the store. We convinced restaurants to sell our burger for a dollar more. Burgers in Steamboat start at $7.99. So if you're going to pay $7.99 for a burger, you just will pay $8.99. The restaurant would make about 40 cents more per plate profit, so they have a vested interest in making it go. And there's a willingness by the consumer to pay a buck more to get locally raised beef. So I think more than anything else that overcame that. But we did have to stop, and we stopped in a year and a half ago to fix some of those problems. We had problems with inventory. We lost our account with the ski area because we couldn't provide a consistent supply. So we felt like if we didn't stop this and fix these problems, we would never be able to get it up off the ground again. So we did stop for 18 months, reorganize it, and address those problems. We created the idea. We had the Cattlemen's Association, the Extension Office, and the Chamber. We had a meeting, and they wanted to find a way to make ranching be able to capture money out of the resort economy. And this is the best idea we had because cattle ranching is the biggest part of the agricultural economy there. So we created that idea to make this claim about Yampa Valley beef, to protect the working landscapes of the Yampa Valley. And the rancher buy-in was that we would try to pay $100 more per cow than you could get from selling it at Centennial Market in Fort Collins. We could do that when the price of cows was around 32 cents. Price of cows today, we wouldn't pay enough premium, so that becomes a challenge too. Yeah.
I didn't hear that.
Well, that was discussed, and we didn't know we had enough product. We could have. But the other thing we did do, and I brought this up here, you don't just have to put your label on beef. We also label coasters and hats. And you actually use a beef as a loss leader in some cases. There's more markup in coasters and hats than the beef will ever be. And so we actually can make money on these. And just like that guy with King Ropes, you always wonder if they make more money on hats or ropes, don't you? So I wonder if there isn't, the ropes aren't a loss leader. So the other thing you got to remember is you have a great label, a great idea. It doesn't just have to go on a package of beef. And we do make money on these. I didn't bring any coasters with me, but that's when we started our business plan again. We broadened our product base. The only trouble I had is all the member ranchers stole these hats from me, and I couldn't get them. I couldn't sell enough of them. So, one more. Oh, she asked me what standards did our beef have to meet before it was slaughtered. That's a great question. Thank you. Our beef had to be raised in the Yampa Valley at least for 18 months. It had to be an English cross. It could not be continually fed antibiotics. And no beef is, but that's a great marketing thing to say. And that was it. And it had to be a body condition score 5 or better. Because we lost money on really thin cows. So those are the standards. English cross, but BCS of 5 or better. No continually feeding of antibiotics with the standards our cows had and raised in the Yampa Valley. Okay. Thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be here today.